to the next case, Hines versus the City of Chicago.
Morning, Your Honor. John Cook for the appellant. In this case, there has been a consistent pattern by the City of Chicago in avoiding persistent requests for essential information concerning the identity of the police officers. The case involved an unlawful arrest and search of Sally and Aaron Hines on January 1, 2000, between the hours of 11 p.m. and 12 a.m. Later in January 2000, Sally and Aaron filed a report concerning the incident with the police department. Thereafter, Sally and Aaron consulted with me, and after a preliminary review of the facts with Sally and Aaron, I addressed a letter to the Office of Professional Standards saying, please supply further information concerning the facts learned by your department. Initially, I would like to have the names and star numbers of the officers and the number of the squad car, in addition to any report that they may have filed.
Did you take advantage of every available avenue of discovery to find out the names of the police officers?
Yes, ma'am, I believe I did.
Let
me say this. The City of Chicago Corporation Council, when they appeared in this case, they never sent us a copy of their appearance. We were suing the city and two unidentified employees fully describing an incident. As far as we were concerned, the City of Chicago, the Corporation Council's office, was representing all concerned. The City of Chicago filed no answer on behalf of the officers, filed nothing other than a motion to dismiss the city on the Monell case, which was finally decided on June 28th of 2001.
Now, the motion to dismiss, was it filed?
Pardon?
When that was filed, you knew the city was in when the motion to dismiss was filed, and no subpoena was issued then to find out the names of the officers. And would that have been within the time frame?
No.
Couldn't you have
asked? We know the city is in. We know that.
Right.
We know that they
have
not.
It's pretty typical in this type of case that the plaintiff would not know the name of the officers, and frequently the lawsuit is filed, and then the first thing plaintiff's counsel does is issue a subpoena so that the officers can be identified.
Well,
I'm just curious why that wasn't done.
I think the reason that was not done was that we carried on this correspondence, and we'd had this basically spurious claim when we asked for the officers that our request was barred by the Freedom of Information Act. There's no question that that's wrong, that they claimed that it was exempt under the Act. Now, they're making a statement there on which perhaps I shouldn't have relied on it, but I think it's a reasonable reliance. They do this all the time. They knew it was wrong. They knew that they were withholding something under the claiming that the Freedom of Information Act had an exemption which let them do that, and it did not have any such exemption.
Right.
They were required to give us that information.
I understand that. And you filed your complaint in early December and still had time to issue the subpoena to identify the officers.
I could have done.
The city doesn't always do what they should do. And so I understand that, but there is an avenue of redress for you.
Avenue of redress, and there's also an avenue of being able to rely on the public body from taking a correct, legally sound position.
But there was a seven-month wait,
right?
Well, it really wasn't 7 months, because if you'll recall, the City of Chicago is in with the Corporation Council. They've not appeared. They've not denied the complaint. They've not answered the complaint with respect to the John Doe and Jane Doe. They've avoided that. They filed a motion, and they finally are taken out of the case on, I think it was June 28th. Within a month, then, we followed the procedure of subpoenaing the records. They said at that point, and this another is a questionable statement, you know, we represent the city of Chicago, we don't represent the police force. How can that be? Because the police officers are their agents. But then when they're barred, we immediately go ahead, we file the request for production of documents, we subpoena the records.
Right.
The Corporation Counsel, Mr. Park, said that he doesn't have any obligation to do this, but he's going to give us
right.
this information.
I understand that. I just don't understand why you didn't do it sooner, knowing that you had a 2-year statute of limitations. And the reason for the 2-year statute of limitations, I think, is because police officers change and there are lots of sort of allegations like this, you try to get the police officers identified within the 2-year time frame.
We've been very specific with the city. And I think the real question, I guess, is perhaps I could have done something differently. Hindsight's always good. Maybe I shouldn't have relied on what I felt I was being told. But as the court, we're dealing with a question here of whether there is equitable estoppel against the city here. As the court said in Shropshire, the concept of equitable estoppel is not tied to the legislative judgment of the statute of limitations. Rather, it focuses on the circumstances that will justify preventing a party from relying on the statute of limitation because that party's conduct has induced another into forbearing suit within the applicable statute of limitations. As the court wrote in Bamba, the doctrine takes its life not from the language of the statute, but from the equitable principle that no man shall be permitted to profit from his own wrongdoing in a court of justice. Now, there was wrongdoing here in some of the answers that we were getting. Admittedly, we could have maybe done something different. The question here is...
Not admittedly, you needed to do something different, Mr. Clark.
I didn't know. I think equitable stop... I believe equitable stop would protect Sally and Aaron Hines on what happened here, because the real question is, who should suffer in determining...
Did the city give you anything in writing about this?
Pardon?
Did the city give you anything in writing about this that you could use to stop the clock? In other words, the city says we're looking for these officers. No, they were giving you other sort of reasons, spurious reasons.
Spurious reasons.
So you don't even... You know, if you had something in writing saying, you know, we're looking for it, or, you know, we don't have it, we'll try to get it. You know, you might be in a better position here on equitable estoppel.
That's not this case.
Look,
no.
the bottom line here, sad to say, mm-hmm. is that the method that finally uncovered the officer's names, which was the use of discovery, was available
right.
to you long before the statute of limitations expired. It's very troubling. Of course it's troubling, but, you know, the suit wasn't filed until a month before the deadline, and then 7 months went by before the necessary discovery requests were made. And as early as May of 2001, the plaintiffs knew that discovery was available. And what I am trying to understand is why you failed to take advantage of those procedures until July 2002, and that's the problem.
It was within the question of what I relied on. Now, I think what I wanted to end up here with is the question is, who should bear this loss? Now, when you're dealing with equitable estoppel, should it be Sally and Aaron, who did everything? They made the necessary requests through their lawyers. They sought information. They didn't get it. And instead, are they to lose out as against the city, which really, when you look at this record, took every possible step to avoid disclosing until the last month? Who should bear that loss? Should it be the city how is the city hurt by this? They know from the beginning what we're looking for. They've made the investigation.
Should they do that in every case, do you think? Just
I don't know what they do in every case.
Well, I mean, if we allowed it in this case, wouldn't we have to allow it in every single case?
I think when you're dealing with a public body such as the city, when they give you basically spurious information, when they refuse to answer legitimate requests, when they make claims of exemption under the Freedom of Information Act, they deal with that all the time. They know that that's wrong. I don't deal with the Freedom of Information
Act. And then that, but there's no case that supports this argument that you're making
this is
now. In terms, I mean, there's been no court that's recognized that as a theory by which we could make the city accountable.
I think the court, in applying the questions of equitable estoppel, have to consider who should bear the loss.
But I'm saying you haven't cited any case that's similar to the facts in this case.
Well, I think that City of Chicago Heights case was somewhat similar, in which they were seeking the information. The Court of Appeals reversed there, where they couldn't get the information out of the City of Chicago Heights. Every case is going to be different, but this is a case that must be decided on its own facts. On where is it wrong? Who did it? Sally and Aaron Hines didn't do anything wrong. I may have been able to do it earlier. The city wasn't hurt by that. They were fully and completely prepared to do whatever they had to do to defend this case. Why shouldn't they be put to their defense? It's a legitimate case. Let them defend it. Why should it be dismissed merely because the site court decides, well, we're not going to apply the principle of equitable estoppel here. These guys in the city didn't do any wrong, though. They did do wrong. They did it intentionally, deliberately, consistently, month after month. The case comes to me after these girls have come to me toward the end of the year. I look at it. I immediately send a letter. I immediately ask for the information. I go from letter to letter, to follow-up letter to follow-up letter. Finally, the claim that it's exempt under the Freedom of Information Act. Have I done something wrong? Well, I could have done the discovery earlier, but who's to bear the loss? Is it to be Sally and Aaron on the doctrines of equitable estoppel, or is it to be the City of Chicago, which
Mr. Cook, you don't want us to answer that question.
Because there is
you
an alternative.
You do not want us to answer that question. And if you ask it again, I will answer the question as to who should bear the loss.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Thank you. Anything else?
Good morning. May it please the court. The plaintiffs waited almost 1 year after the alleged strip searches to request the names of the officers involved from the Chicago Police Department. And when the department told them it was not going to release that information, they waited another year to serve a discovery request on the city's law department. That request led to the prompt disclosure of the requested information, but the plaintiffs waited another 2 months to amend their complaint to name the officers. As we explain in our brief, under applicable law, both equitable tolling and equitable estoppel require plaintiffs to act reasonably in the prosecution of their lawsuit. Because these plaintiffs did not do so, their tolling and estoppel arguments should be rejected. In particular, our brief explains that the plaintiffs concede that although their injury accrued on January 1, 2000, it wasn't until nearly a year later that their counsel, Mr. Cook, contacted the police department to request the officers' names. When Officer Golar told Mr. Cook in no uncertain terms that the department was not going to give out that information, the plaintiffs waited another year to serve a discovery request, even though they knew throughout that time that discovery procedures were available to them. The city promptly responded, but the plaintiffs waited another 2 months more to amend their complaint to name the officers. They have never explained why it took them 2.5 years to use discovery procedures, nor have they explained why, once discovery produced the information they were seeking, it took them another 2 months to name the officers. The plaintiffs simply were not reasonably diligent in pursuing their claims, and as a result, the district court properly concluded that these claims are time-barred. Before concluding, I wanted to briefly address a new argument raised in the reply brief regarding the correctness of Officer Golar's belief that the IAD investigation file was exempt under the Illinois Freedom of Information Act. The plaintiffs did not make this argument to the district court or in their opening brief, and accordingly it is waived. An application of the waiver rule is particularly appropriate here because as a result of the plaintiff's failure to make this argument in a timely manner, the record on this issue is undeveloped. Had the city been given an opportunity to develop the record would have shown that it is police department policy to disclose as little as possible during an ongoing IAD investigation so that the officer in question does not learn that he is being investigated, thereby compromising the investigation. This policy is clearly authorized by the Illinois FOIA. It may be that, although the record is not clear on this, that by the time Mr. Cook contacted Officer Golar, the IAD investigation was complete, which means that Officer Golar may have been mistaken when he stated that the file was exempt. Had Mr. Cook pursued the matter further, either by making a proper written FOIA request, as the FOIA statute requires, or by using discovery, it could have been determined whether this material was, in fact, producible. But because Mr. Cook was not reasonably diligent, this was not done, confirming that neither tolling nor estoppel is warranted here. In sum, these plaintiffs did not act reasonably in the prosecution of their lawsuit, and accordingly, we respectfully request that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken.